Anita, how's your mental health?
Questionable at all times, you know this.
Yeah, how's the mental health of your children?
Also a little bit tricky. Can I tell you my experience in trying to find therapists for myself and my kids, Mel?
Yes, please.
Okay, this is how it goes. You ask around your friends and your family for a referral for somebody who's nearby. You finally find somebody who sounds like they might work for your family. You give them a call and you find out that A, they're not accepting new patients, or B, they have a huge wait list. So you start over again and you ask people if they know anybody who would be a good therapist and a good fit. Finally, you find one, you go and you meet with them, and you figure out that you don't actually like them that much. But it's been so much work to find somebody who you can go to in your area that you're kind of stuck with them. Well, do you have any ideas for how to get around this?
I do because guess what? I've actually had some therapists that I have found on my own, which involves what you're saying. Sometimes I remember one time I was like 3 hours in the bathtub on my phone looking through websites. I was such a prune at the end. But I have also had the experience with working with BetterHelp, and it was like I don't want to say too good to be true, but because it is true, but it's like amazing because I was matched with my therapist within 24 hours.
And you didn't have to go through all of that other ridiculous process of trying to find somebody. And here's the cool thing, too, is if that person didn't work out for you, you can just switch and say, and it's not like you're committing to another years long search for somebody who you're going to jive with.
That's true. And I lucked out, or maybe just BetterHelp is really good at matching people together because I never had to change my therapist. I loved her, perfect fit for me. And I know that some of our friends have used BetterHelp and they've had to change therapists, and boom, same day, you can change.
Easy
You can ghost your therapist, get a
peasy.
new one.
I love this idea. BetterHelp is one of our sponsors. If you use our promo code trybetterhelp.com/WWDN, you get 10% off your first month, and we totally recommend it.
Yes, get some therapy. That's
Ha.
trybetterhelp.com/WWDN.
All right, Mel, let's get right to this, shall we?
Yes, I'm interested in this because you've done a lot of research. I've done not as much research. So this is basically a research project by Anita.
Yeah, and I want to get your thoughts on it because so I think you're probably the same as me. When Jason died, I was in such a fog and I was in so much just chaos and trauma that when it came to the disposition of his remains,
Ooh,
which
fancy.
sounds like such an undertaker thing to say, I did what was the path of least resistance. So that just meant kind of what was expected of me, or what most people in my community do, or most people in my religion do. That's what I did. And I didn't really think about it. And I didn't have time to think about it or brains to think about it. Was it the same for you?
Exactly the same. I didn't even consider anything other than burial, funeral within 1 week, the
Yeah.
end. That's
Yeah.
it.
So you guys know that recently my sister died. And I helped my brother-in-law through the same process that I went through of figuring out what to do and schedule, and went with him to the funeral home. And the whole time we were going through that process, I just kept thinking, like, why? Why is this the way we do things? It just everything struck me as so weird. And then because I have the brains now, I was able to think like, but why do we do it this way? And so then it just set me off on this path of looking into, like the history of certain ways that we deal with deceased people and some of the maybe like the laws surrounding it, the traditions, the reasoning. And I want to talk to you about that.
Awesome. I'm excited for this. The only research I have done into this is, man, I want to say this was probably within the year after Scott died. And the only thing that I have done, which was really helpful, was I read a book called From Here to Eternity
Yes, me too.
by Caitlin. How do you say her name? Yeah,
Doty.
Doty by Caitlin Doty. And it was really fascinating. And then I continued on my merry horrifying widow way, and was like, well, whatever. I mean, I buried him in the end. So yeah, I'm really interested to hear what you have discovered, because you and I have talked a little bit about some of these things. Just mm-hmm. when, like, I remember after you were done helping your brother-in-law, and you're like, okay, but why? Because you and I both use the same funeral home. And so we just had some questions. So yeah. Let's do it, Anita. Please educate me.
So I read that same book, and I've also read a book a long, long time ago that's called Stiff. And it's by a lady named Mary Roach. And it was all about, it was the strangest book, but so fascinating, what they do with dead bodies. So those are two of the places that I'm drawing information from, and also just the internet, you know, where you can find all sorts of information. Go ahead.
And one thing, back to From Here to Eternity, Caitlin Doughty is actually a mortician.
Yeah.
So she seemed to have had some of the same questions that we had, even as a mortician, like she was doing things the traditional way, right? Am I mm-hmm. wrong? And then, so she was set off on a quest. So I feel like she would be our friend.
I'm not sure she started off doing it the same way as everybody else. I think she might've come into it with the, like, why do we do it this way? And why is this such a business? Yeah, I'm not 100% sure, but it seems like she kind of came into it with a little bit of a different mindset. You know, before we do get started, I do want to say that this might be a little bit hard to listen to, because like me, we all made choices, right? And we did the best we could with the information at the time. And now I look back on it and I think maybe I wouldn't have done the same thing if I had the information that I have now, but we can't change it. I mean, I could, but that would be like a lot of effort, and it's not worth it to me. But I mean, possibly.
Yeah, this could, I mean, this is maybe for people who are considering their own future death. Oh my gosh. Or, you know, if they find themselves in this situation again and they have to make decisions, I know that I would do it the same way. Cause I mean, I wasn't married to Scott very long. It was also what his family's traditions were. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's, you know, I'm settled with what happened, but for my own death, I've totally done a 180. So
yeah. Well, and it might also just be something that you've been curious about and wonder about also. So don't beat yourself up if you feel like you learn some of these things and you think, well, why was I sucked into the machine too? Because that's how it's designed to be. So, yeah. All right, okay. Here we go. So one thing that we know is that from like the beginning of time, people have prepared their deceased people to be disposed of, whether that was burial or preservation or something else. Like, if we know something about an ancient society, a lot of the times we know it. This is going to sound so stupid. We know it because of the dead bodies that we found.
Right.
I know they're all dead now because they're ancient. But a lot of times we have found a person who was buried by the people around them, not just because the society like all died out. I think that makes sense. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Of course, they're all dead now because that was a long, long time ago. But we know a lot about societies because we find people that were buried and we see how that they were prepared or how they were positioned or how their bodies were treated with certain plants or chemicals and things like that. So I think it's interesting that it's always been a thing
mm-hmm.
from like forever ago.
Yeah.
So, but then when you get into some of those ancient traditions, there's this quote by a guy named Sir William Ewart Gladstone. And he said, and this is like the favorite of funeral homes everywhere, "Show me the manner in which a nation cares for its dead, and I will measure with mathematical exactness the tender mercies of its people, their respect for the laws of the land, and their loyalty to high ideals."
Okay, first of all, I don't think you can mathematically measure loyalty, and also everyone from Utah knows the phrase tender mercies. Maybe this is where it came from. Maybe. Stop. Okay. Continue. Sorry. I digress. Okay.
Well, the point of this is that we have really strong feelings. Societies have really strong feelings about how we take care of dead people. We look at other ways people do things and think, oh, they're awful. They don't respect bodies. They don't respect the deceased because of the way that they deal with them compared to how we deal with them. which is ironic. Mel, this is sort of random, but did you ever watch the show Last Kingdom on Netflix?
Is that Uhtred, son of Uhtred, son of another Uhtred?
Yes.
Yeah, I did a little bit.
Okay, I know that this isn't like real history, but this came to mind when I was thinking about this. So there is a part in that show. This takes place in like long, 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 long time ago England. And the main character was born from an English family, but then he was raised by the Danes or the Vikings. And he grows up, and so he's kind of these two different worlds. And he's away at war or something, and his wife dies. And he comes back, and the Christians had buried her. And the Christians thought that that was the right, good, proper thing to do with a body. But for him, that was a terrible way to be disposed of or taken care of as a body. So he dug her up and he lit her on fire and burned her. And the Christians were like, how dare you desecrate that body? And he was like, how dare you bury that body? So it just goes to show that we both, like, different societies think that the way they're doing it is the right way and the other people are the bad ones.
And really, they're just different ways of doing it.
Yeah, it's like both people, we all love our people, our family, our friends, our loved ones. And the way we take care of them after they die shows that we love them, even though we do it in like completely opposite ways.
So fascinating. I love human behavior, like studying human behavior, because those are some of those things. Well, and I think everybody, if they've spent any sort of time on the planet, will deal with things in the gray area. But also, I think us as widows, we live in even more gray area. And so I feel like a lot of us have, you know, maybe if we have had one particular experience our whole life, the death breaks us open so much that we're able to have room for other people and other cultures or other religions or other death traditions as well. So yeah.
Although sometimes, do you think it goes the other way and we become more calcified in our beliefs? Like because this is the way I did it, that this must be the proper way to do it.
I think it can happen sometimes. It depends on the person, I think. Yeah. I've noticed that, you know, with just some observations of people in my life, you know, a death can make somebody hold even tighter to what they would naturally do and, you know, maybe put that on other people. But I don't know. I think it depends on the person and kind of how flexible they are.
So when I was helping my brother-in-law and we were trying to find a place for my sister to be buried, which, you guys, that's actually like a real issue right now. Cemeteries are running out of physical space to bury people. And it's so bizarre. So as we were trying to navigate that system, I was like, why do we bury people? And then it got me thinking back to like the olden days, you know? And I think that the early disposition of bodies was influenced by two factors. The first was your religion, your belief in gods or a higher power and an afterlife. And two was practical matters. So if you lived in a place with really rocky soil, or it was frozen, the ground was frozen for 10 months out of the year, and you actually could not dig a hole for a body to go into, then you're probably not going to bury a person. You might gravitate towards a different way to deal with human remains. And then also there are places where there's no trees. And so you can't cremate or burn because it would just be too costly. Like there's not the environmental ability to do that. So like if you don't have firewood, you're not going to burn. And then there's the really practical issues that we don't really deal with now, but were like a big deal back in, I only think of like the pioneer times because I'm from Utah and that's all we think about is the pioneers. Some, like, you didn't want animals eating your loved ones for some reason. Although some societies do want animals to eat their loved ones. And then there was the issue with like transmission of diseases and the taking care of like remains that are decomposing. Like, it's a practical issue that they have to be dealt with. You can't just ignore it. Sometimes we assume that unless we had a huge life insurance payout, we don't really need to know anything about investments or even finances. But guess what? A little knowledge of finances is critical for all of us. Maybe your partner was in charge of that stuff, and now you find yourself making all the decisions. Maybe you're mad about that. Maybe I am. Nicole from the He's Gone But the Money's Not podcast is here to help. She tackles financial literacy by telling the stories of women and widows and finance experts and shares the lessons they've learned as certified financial planners. Whether you know a lot and feel confident in your financial decisions or feel unsure about all of that stuff, there is more to learn. Listen and subscribe to the He's Gone But the Money's Not podcast on all podcast platforms. This ad was paid for by Rockhouse Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
I have a question for you, because this is something that I have thought of. I mean, even just growing up, you know, we grew up in a religious community and we still live in Utah, and we have a lot of friends who are Christian or Jewish or atheist or something else, or Buddhist or what have you. And I know that growing up, the things that I heard in my community were, you should not cremate somebody, because then when the resurrection happens, how will your body get put back together? But then I have another question, because a lot of my Catholic friends, they cremate their person.
Like, there's so many Christian religions. And so to get into the like depths of what each one believes would be really hard. So we're just going to do our best to understand and kind of do a blanket general statement about, you know, the belief in resurrection. And yes, I do think, I'm not aware of any Christian religion that does not believe in resurrection. There might be some, but I'm not aware of any. So yes, I do think that that's a big factor in deciding how a person was taken care of.
I also have another question, because there are some caveats to that. Sometimes you cannot control how people die. They can't die at home or in a hospital. Maybe they died in a plane crash. Maybe they died in 9/11. Maybe they died at sea. Maybe they're missing. So those are kind of some of those topics where it kind of, there might be a caveat, I guess, to the religious practice. Did you find anything about that?
Oh, well, for sure. I mean, I think that most religions also have kind of a like, this is what we want to happen, but we understand that sometimes that can't happen. For instance, sometimes there's a really practical thing, like in some countries, there's just not space to bury people. So they're going to be cremated whether or not you're whatever religion. And there are some religions that don't believe in embalming bodies, but some countries, municipalities have laws stating you have to. Like if you're going to transport a body from one place to another, it has to be embalmed first. Well, some religions don't like that. So I, through my research, I found that most religions have a, we don't want you to do this unless you have to, basically, for whatever reason, for law or, you know, because of circumstance. But what you brought up is totally pertinent, because the way that people historically took care of their, you know, their dead loved ones or their family and friends, that was a big part of it. For instance, like you wouldn't want to cremate somebody because it makes it hard for them to be resurrected. Or on the flip side of that, some people believe that if you were to bury a body, it traps the soul within the mortal remains. And so the only way to release that is to burn the body. And some people believe that through a religious perspective, that that energy needs to return to the earth, and that that's how the soul is released. And then there's lots of people who don't have a belief in a God or a higher power like that. And it's more energy systems and, you know, returning to the earth. So, but I think that we've kind of moved away from a lot of those things, because a lot of those practicalities we don't have to worry about anymore. We have backhoes to dig holes. We have, you know, ways to get around a lot of that stuff. We don't use fires from wood to burn, you know, to cremate people anymore.
You don't.
Well,
I'm just kidding.
There, that you know of, Mel.
Yeah.
There are a few places that do that, but it's very, very, very rare in the United States. I mean, there are still probably places around the world, but I'm just saying, like, we've moved beyond a lot of those practical concerns. And I think we've moved beyond a lot of those religious concerns, too. So why do we still do things the same way that we always have is the weird thing to me.
Tradition! Tell me everything.
Well, I also think about back in the pioneer days or the olden times.
The 1800s.
The 1800s, the 1700s. It felt comforting to think that your family was still together, even if they were buried in the ground. Like,
yeah.
For some reason, it tied you to the earth. It connected you to your place. But now we're so global. You know, everybody moves all around the country and around the world. And we have planes and we have, you know, spaceships. So that seems like an interesting thing to still be worried about. And then we have these weird feelings about dead bodies. Like I was saying before, we didn't want them to get eaten by animals. Like that feels hard to think might happen. But what are they doing with their body? Like they don't need it anymore. So why does that hurt and offend us?
Yeah.
I don't know, but it does. I'm like, ooh, that would make me feel really uncomfortable to think about that.
Yeah, definitely.
Whereas in other societies, maybe that's not true.
Okay.
So,
continue.
Okay. So we know that preservation of bodies has taken place like forever and ever and ever. The first we know about it was like 5,000 to 6,000 BCE. In
what does the E stand for?
I don't know. Google it.
Okay, hold on. Listen, as long as this is like a learning episode, we're gonna learn together. You guys.
Because it used to we used to say BC, just ACDC, BC. Right?
Oh, the E stands for era, before the Christian era.
So
I think the BC used to be before Christ, right? Now it's before the Christian era.
Got
or
it.
Before the common era.
Oh.
Ooh.
Okay. Well, a long time ago. How's that? And that was in like Peru, Chile, what we now know of there. That's like the first evidence we have of that. And then, of course, what person doesn't know about the Egyptians? Like, I used to be so fascinated with the books on how they mummified people. Did you ever read those?
Ooh, no.
They had like picture books and they'd be like, they take their brains out through their nose. And I totally pictured it as like a spaghetti noodle that they would pull their brain out. And it was like one really long spaghetti noodle.
Whoa, that would be really interesting.
That's not your experience.
No, but my experience, I have been to the Louvre and there are mummified cats and other mummified things there. So I am interested in learning how they do those things, but I've not read a book on it.
Oh, okay. Well, I have a book on it. It's a picture book. I should bring it
to you.
Oh,
good. Yeah, I can do that.
I think it's fascinating. Anyway, I always have thought that was really interesting. So I think that the reason for preserving bodies has changed maybe through the years. We know that the Egyptians did it because they wanted to preserve the body so that the spirit could be reunited with it later. So basically a resurrection, a non-Christian resurrection. And then lots of societies and cultures have done that since. In that book, the From Here to Eternity, do you remember the part where they talked about Tana Toraja in Indonesia?
I don't know. Can you remind me what that is?
So they have like, they mummify their people, like just at home.
Oh,
they're mummified.
Yes, I do remember this part.
Yeah. And they keep them at home until their funeral, which sounds totally fine and normal until you find out that their funeral could be like in 7 years. And like grandma is just in the boy's bedroom over there. She's mummified and they like change their clothes and they talk to them and...
And they're still, their body is still there, a part of their lives.
Yes. Yeah.
I just want to know about the smell.
Well, they mummify them. So they like do stuff to, I don't know, keep them from decaying,
okay.
I guess. But I don't know. So I think this is super interesting too. Embalming. I remember growing up and my grandma, who is the funniest lady, we were eating Sunday dinner one day and she was like, I don't want to be embalmed. And we were like, okay. And she fully seriously told us that the only reason they embalmed people was to make sure that they were dead.
Okay.
And then this started this great conversation with my entire family about how we shouldn't embalm people, but we should put them, we should put a phone in their casket with them so they can call for help. And then we had this whole funny conversation about how there would need to be an answering service. It would be called the Nearly Dead Answering Service.
I love this.
It was so funny. This is many, many years ago. So, and spoiler alert, my grandma was embalmed because that's just like, that's what happens. And she was definitely for sure dead.
But why was she embalmed if she told you guys, I don't want to be embalmed? Is that a discussion point for later?
It's
or can
not,
you tell me now?
I can't, because I was not involved in that decision at all. So I don't know. I don't know.
I was wondering if it was required by the funeral home or something.
Oh, we are going to talk about that for sure.
All right. Well, TBD.
And that's an interesting topic in and of itself.
Okay.
But I don't know why my grandma was embalmed. I don't know any of the discussion that surrounded that. But embalming, as we know it today, with like, well, they used to use arsenic, but now they use kind of like formaldehyde and some other chemicals.
Okay.
It became popular around the Civil War in the U.S.
Formaldehyde.
Why do you think that is?
For preserving things.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was no refrigeration. That's my guess.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
murder.
Well, it was a war. So they were all, there was tons and tons of people dying. And they were dying away from home. So families, if they wanted the body of their family member back, they had to be preserved somehow. Because otherwise they would be on a train or on a wagon for a long time and would decompose. And so it became more and more regular to start embalming people. So when they embalm people, I read so much about this, Mel. It's pretty interesting. But it's not, we're not going to get too much into it today, but removing blood and pumping in chemicals to stop decomposition.
Hmm.
And then it got popular, quote unquote, because they embalmed President Lincoln and he went on like a 2-month train trip. Did you know that?
What?
Yeah.
His body just was like sitting up, hanging out in his hat.
Yes. No, I'm pretty sure he was lying down in a coffin.
Oh, I had a really great visual.
it wasn't that cool, but they would take the train from city to city and then have like a viewing or some sort of a memorial service all over the country for him. So they had to preserve him, and then it kind of was like in vogue to do that. So that influenced people's desire. I also read the craziest story about a dentist in England who embalmed his wife and then put her on display in his front window of his dental practice to drum up business.
Wait, but that would make you stay away, wouldn't it?
I don't understand how or why that would encourage anybody to come to your dental practice. But yeah, she was like embalmed and then set in paraffin
and wax. Was,
yeah, I think. And then put in display.
I know exactly what he was doing. Creating his own wax museum.
Yeah.
Clearly.
With his real wife. And then he got in trouble for it because people said that's not cool. And he was like, why? Anyway, that is a really also weird story. But nowadays, I was under the impression that you had to be embalmed. Do you think you have to be embalmed, Mel?
I never thought about it until I read Caitlin's book.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that you do not have to be.
Yeah.
Is that true? Did I forget because of Widow Brain?
No, I don't. This is my caveat. Every state, every municipality has different laws.
Okay.
So I can't say 100% for everywhere.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was by cemetery as well, or area of cemetery.
So I looked up Utah's laws because that's where we are. And I found out that nowhere in the Utah law does it say you must be embalmed.
Okay.
You have to either be embalmed or be refrigerated.
Huh.
Which I kind of feel like the funeral homes here embalm you and refrigerate you.
Yeah.
So I was like, actually, I don't think I needed to embalm Jason. I think he could have just been refrigerated and it would have been fine. Like, it would have been legal, I guess. And I found out that in Utah, there's no law that you have to be in a casket.
What?
But for instance, the cemetery that Jason is buried in requires a casket and requires a vault. So then it gets to be cemetery to cemetery, city to city, you know, whether it's a city cemetery or a private cemetery, they all have their own laws. So it's pretty darn complicated.
How did you find this out? Where do you go to learn by state?
I just Googled,
What is
like,
the governing body of funeral situations and disposition of bodies
so
for?
it's like state code. There's a lot of laws about who can be cremated and who can be aquamated and who can't.
We haven't even talked
Because
about aquamation
I
yet, which
know.
I'm so stoked about.
Yeah, which is like a new, it's a n new up and coming thing. So the other thing about this was this led me down the rabbit hole of the FTC, which is the Federal Trade Commission. And the Federal Trade Commission has laws about the funeral industry because the reason that people are embalmed, Mel, the number one reason is money. Because the funeral
People
homes make
making
money.
money. Oh.
Yes, they get to charge you a ton of money to embalm your person. And when I was reading the FTC information, there was very specific language that your funeral home was supposed to ask. They were supposed to ask specifically, do you want us to embalm your person? And they were not supposed to make it seem like that was the only option. They were supposed to tell you what your options were. And that did not happen with me. I was under the impression that I had to embalm him.
I didn't even get the choice because Scott died in Idaho. I was not there. And I think that question would have been asked to his parents, who he was with.
So I know this, you would not have had a choice because he had to be transported.
That's right. It was required if you cross a state line.
Yes. Yeah. If you have to be transported in a way that's not going to be refrigerated, then you have to be embalmed. So you didn't have a choice. But I think I did. And I don't think the funeral home made it seem like I had a choice. I think, and they can't say just like, please take care of my loved one or prepare my loved one. It's like, would you like us to embalm them? And this is why we would do that. And this is why we wouldn't do that. So,
Really?
yeah.
Did they ask your brother-in-law this?
No. They didn't.
Ooh.
So, and this is where things get a little bit like sticky wicket because, like, what am I going to do about it?
Yeah.
Nothing. But for the next person I Sherpa, if I have to Sherpa another person through this, I will ask because I just always assumed it was required and I didn't know that it wasn't required. Actually, I didn't always think it was required, but I thought that if you were not going to be embalmed, you had to be buried within a very short period of time. Like, you had to be buried in like 3 days. But from what I can see, that's not the case.
Okay, next question. Do you know about how much embalming costs? I'm curious how
So,
much.
it's like $4,000. And the other thing about the FTC is they're supposed to have a line item, like what we're charging you for what, you know? And yeah, I can't remember, but I think it's pretty expensive. I think it's a pretty expensive part of the whole thing. 4,000 is probably too much, but probably like 2,500 just for that portion.
Still, it's in the thousands. It's not like
Yes.
$50.
No. And it's a whole big process. And Yes.
I'm kind of maybe getting really scrupulous on this just because it's fascinating. But is there anything detrimental to the environment if you are embalmed and you get buried not in a casket? Because you're pumped with formaldehyde, and even though your body won't break down, there still is some decomposition. I do remember that from the funeral
For
director.
sure, there are some concerns about what we're putting back into the earth. But if you're embalmed, if you're in a casket, if you're in a vault, you're not returning to the earth, you know, like not in the general way that we think of as decomposing and returning to the earth. Like, you're going to be in that casket, not none of your energy is going back to the earth. if that makes sense. And if you were to bury an embalmed person and it happened over and over and over, I think it would be a problem because you'd have a lot of chemicals that are going into the water table, which is something my dad would love to talk to you about. Things like that. And then the whole idea, I had no concept that I was going to have to buy a casket and I was going to have to buy a vault.
Mm.
And the whole vault thing is also very interesting. The reason you need a vault, Mel, do you know why?
Water?
Nope. Well, maybe.
Money.
Money, yes. But it's because the groundskeepers don't want the ground to collapse and for it to have little dips that are hard to mow over. So that way, they don't have to worry about the ground settling around the casket.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
Fascinating. It's really, it's interesting that these things are presented to the grievers and the surviving loved ones, but these are just business things.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
They're not necessarily necessary.
So for sure, I remember this. And the vaults are required by the cemeteries. So it's not like you have a choice not to have one. But I definitely remember when it was time to pick out the vault, my dad saying, do not pay extra for a watertight one. It's not gonna matter. And they make it seem like you want to pay the extra money because you want to take care of your person.
Yes, that's what it was said to me. And I felt guilty if I didn't get it because I'm like, well, I don't know the answer, but all of this is stupid. I just picked a casket, which what is going on? I don't know why Scott's even dead. Scott doesn't care what the casket looks like. Now a vault. And then, oh, not only do I need a vault, now you're going to upsell me to a watertight one. But then the way that they explain it, it's just like, well, because Scott's cemetery is on a hill, well, then water will come into it and you don't want that happening. And I'm like, no, I don't want that happening. And I didn't have the wherewithal to think, but he's dead and it doesn't matter. He's in a casket.
That's the thing is, it's like, who cares if he gets wet? You know?
Yeah.
It still bothers me. Like, I think about every once in a while, I'll be like, oh, it's really cold. Like, Jason's going to be cold. He's dead. So he doesn't care if he's cold. And I don't want him to get wet. But why do I not want him to get wet? I don't know. But it's because we have made it so. We have put our funeral industry around these weird ideas about how we should treat bodies after they're gone. So, really, really, I don't know. It's kind of annoying, don't you think?
I think it's super annoying. And it makes me, and I can see why at the beginning you said, hey, guys, if you've already done these things, like, don't beat yourself up. Because now when you learn information, you're like, really? Oh, that would have been nice to know. So, yeah, I totally, it's one of those things where, and it's hard because, like, our funeral directors, they're nice people. They used to be our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, guys, I didn't need that.
Yeah.
And you told me that I did.
Yeah.
And I'm a young widow now because I had to transport across state lines, pay two funeral homes. Now everything cost me $20,000.
Mm-hmm. That's so much.
And
money.
Including Scott's hospital bills, including my wedding ring he didn't pay off, including his knee surgery he had when we were first married. You know what I mean? And so I'm just like, I know people have to make money, but I do feel like that I wish I had known.
And that's why the FTC has come in to have all of these laws. But NPR did a study on funeral homes, and basically they found that they try and make it really hard. And most funeral homes in the United States are owned by like three or four companies. The one that we used is still one of the only family-run ones, which makes you feel a little bit better about it because it's not all going to some like Chinese corporation that owns 60% of them. But it's still a business and they still are going to try and make money. So, fun fact, Mel.
Yes.
Do you know the difference between a casket and a coffin?
I hope one includes a vampire. That's my idea.
Ding, 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 ding. You got it correct. Just like just like you got President Lincoln's situation correct.
Nina, don't trick me. I have autism. I'm literal. Okay,
so
go ahead.
A casket is rectangular and a coffin is pentagon shaped. So that's, you know, like how it's where vampires would be.
Got it. Cool.
Okay. So let's talk about cremation for a minute, can we?
Yes.
So neither of us chose this as what we did, but so industrial cremation, it used to be that you would build a big fire if you were going to cremate your person and burn them in a fire. But then industrial cremation came about in the late 1800s, and a medical experts got together in Florence, Italy, and they decided that burial was unhygienic. So they pushed for cremation, and that kind of spread to the U.S. in the 1870s as well. And that's when there was like the first industrial cremation in the United States.
Hmm.
So something that I find really interesting is that it wasn't super popular in the beginning, but it's been rising steadily. So the national average in 1960 for somebody to be cremated was like 3.5% of people were cremated versus buried. And in 2018, what do you think it was?
I don't know.
53%.
Ooh.
So that's a big jump. And they think it's going to just keep getting higher. So I also thought this was so interesting. So this is from a long time ago, in 2014. But which state do you think has the highest cremation rate? And what has the lowest cremation rate? And where is Utah?
All right. I feel like the lowest rates would be states that are like Utah, Idaho, places like that. Highest, maybe New York. Some of those.
Good guesses. And you're on the right track. So Nevada has the highest rate, 75% in 2014. So I bet it's even higher now. And the lowest rate is Mississippi, and Utah is 47th out of 50.
Do you think it's because the mob was in Nevada and so they wanted to burn the evidence if they couldn't dump it, the bodies in Lake Mead?
Yes.
Okay.
I was wondering if it's because they're just like sinners.
Except for that was 2014. So that's really interesting.
Still dump them in Lake Mead.
Did it cite why Nevada is such a high rate?
Yeah. Well, no, it didn't specifically cite why Nevada was so high, but the theory was that places that are highly religious and highly Christian, burial was more popular. Mm-hmm. And places that were either no religious, like, or had populations that were different religions, would choose cremation.
Hmm.
But one of the things that's pushing people towards cremation now is cost. In 2010, one third of people reported that the motivation for cremation was how much it cost.
Hmm.
So, which is interesting because a lot of the companies, cremation almost costs as much as burial.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
now they're just like, oh, we're just going to make sure we don't lose money.
Yeah, basically, like we're just going to charge, and they're going to charge you for things like the box to cremate them in. You know, yes, Mel just rolled her eyes so hard.
Guys,
they almost fell out of her head.
I'm changing my mind because, I mean, I've changed my mind since Scott has died and I've learned about all these things. And I'm like, I think I would totally do cremation instead of burial because of the cost. And it's dumb. Why would I be spending money? You know, I would be dead. Maybe I won't have money, or maybe I want to give money to whoever is left, which would probably be your children, Anita, since we are widowwives. But, and then, you know, there are some I know you're going to talk about soon. And now I'm just like, hey, can someone just go dump me at sea? I don't care. Go put my body in the sea. It's free. Feed me to the whales.
Also, it's super against the law to do that.
Yeah.
So if you cremate people and then you spread their ashes at sea, there are rules about that. And I don't think anybody follows those rules, but you're supposed to notify, who is it? Somebody? I can't remember who, but if you spread ashes, you're supposed to do it like 2 miles off of the coast, and then you're supposed to report it to some agency, which, okay, whatever, that's not going to happen.
Oh.
You're not supposed to spread them on beaches. There's a lot of rules about that even too. So, which, I mean, I can kind of understand why they make rules about that, but then kind of not.
Yeah.
You know. I know that you will definitely get kicked out of Disneyland if you try and spread ashes there, because a lot of people do.
Well, just don't tell anybody.
No, they are watching for that. At the Haunted Mansion, it's a real problem.
Are you serious?
I am not. I am dead serious about
that. Ha ha. No pun intended. Nice, Anito.
So the Trade Commission also says that the funeral homes are supposed to tell you that you don't need to be burned in a casket, that you can be burned in like a pine box or even a cardboard box. But they still charge you a lot.
Wait,
that.
I thought that you just went on like a grate.
Mm-mm.
And they burned you. You still have to have a...
You have to be in a container of some sort. Otherwise, you would just fall onto the oven.
I'm sure you already mentioned this just now, but I think I've just been so shocked that I didn't pay attention to that part. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah. I know some of our like friends who that was a big sticking point, that they were like, no, I just want the cardboard box. And they're like, okay, the cardboard box is $1,000. And you're like, can't we just get it from Amazon?
No.
That's got to be a big box. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay.
Here's the other thing that I think is kind of upsetting, and don't be upset by this, but people think of cremation as being more quote unquote green than embalming and burying in a vault and in a casket. But it's not, because two things.
Incineration!
Incineration. They use tons of fossil fuels. It's not something that doesn't have consequences. So it contributes to pollution. So that kind of sucks. And then I hear people say all the time, cremate me and put me around a tree, like plant me around a tree. But all of the nutrients of your body that are gone. Like, you are no longer fertilizer at that point. You're basically just...
You're just blobs of garbage. Bone. Yeah.
They're supposed to grind up the bones before they give them back to you. They're not supposed to give you any bones that are identifiable. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah.
Interesting. But
after somebody is cremated, they actually usually have big chunks of bone. And then they put you in a grinder to try and make those bones smaller. So you can't say, oh, that's their finger bone. It's just like a weird chunk. So
interesting.
Yeah. So far, I feel like there's not a lot of good options, but there are, I feel like, more options coming to fruition. I want to talk to you about some of the different religious beliefs.
Okay.
So you asked about Catholics earlier.
Yes.
And you guys, this came from the internet. So there's probably going to be a lot of nuance that is lost in this. We're just going through some very basic information. So cremation was historically forbidden until 1963.
Okay.
But then there was a change to that because, just practically speaking, we're running out of space for people to be buried. So now the guidance is that you can be cremated, but you should not scatter the ashes. You should keep them in one place because that will make resurrection more difficult.
Okay.
And before Catholic people die, they are supposed to be given sacraments and last rites. So,
by a priest, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Protestants, cremation and burial is acceptable. And, oh, this is so interesting too. The whole concept of organ donation. I was talking to my dad about this and he was like, I don't want you to donate my organs.
Why?
And he's like, we'll make it harder for me to be resurrected. And I'm like, okay, well, I find that interesting, but good to know. Because I asked my parents about their advanced directives the other day. It was really interesting, but it's a topic for another time.
Right. Okay.
So some religions are okay with organ donation and autopsies, and some are not. But okay. Catholics, Protestants are okay with both. Jewish. We talked to Maya, Rabbi Maya, a little bit about this, but autopsy and embalming are forbidden under ordinary circumstances, but they realize that sometimes it has to happen. Open caskets are not usually permitted.
Okay.
The funeral is supposed to be as soon as possible after death, and people wear dark clothing, and you're not supposed to bury the person on the Sabbath. And then after, there's three mourning periods are held after the burial, with Shiva being the first 7 days after burial. So, interesting.
Yes.
Buddhists. So Buddhists, organ donation is not permitted in like strict Buddhism, which has a name, like Tibetan and Pure Land Buddhist. They're not supposed to donate organs. But I think the less strict versions, they're okay with that. And cremation is preferred to burial. So that's interesting.
Interesting. Okay.
There's tons of variations in Native American tribes, but organ donation is generally not preferred. Yes, Mel.
Do you know on some of these if what the person is cremated or buried in, what if it matters what they wear? Because some religions have garb, I guess. Yeah.
I think that definitely there are a lot of variabilities there, but I think that's probably like too specific to get into. But generally, it used to be that people were buried in their Sunday finest or some sort of a traditional, you know, ceremonial or garb, but it's becoming more and more like bury them in their favorite outfit. Like that's changing a lot, I think.
Yeah.
So anyway, Native Americans prefer a natural or green burial, and they have a lot of feelings about hauntings and animals and the earth. So that's kind of cool. Hinduism is cremation is what is preferred in Hinduism.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And I think that they are okay with organ donation and autopsy. So Muslims, so embalming and cremation are not permitted. Autopsies are really strongly not desirable, which that was an interesting thing for my sister because they took her for an autopsy and they don't give you a choice. They don't say, would you like an autopsy? Sometimes they do, but in the vast majority of cases, it's just the law. Like the law decides who's going to get one and who's not going to get one. So it's not a sticking point for us religiosity-wise, but it was like, it was a bit jarring to know that without having a say in it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have strong feelings about it because I wanted to know why Jason died. So I was like, yes, please do that because what the hell?
Yeah, same, same. Know?
Yeah, but not for her. We kind of knew. So burial should take place as soon as possible. And the men and women sit separately at the funeral, and flowers and excessive mourning are discouraged. So that's kind of interesting.
I do know something about this a little tiny bit.
Tell me more.
Very tiny, minuscule. I know of some people who are female. Their mother died while in a Muslim country, and the parents had just moved over there. So, but the mom was of a Christian religion. And I think the dad maybe was not a practicing Muslim, but because they were there, they were abiding by Muslim tradition. And the female members of the family, because of those traditions, were not able to even watch the burial. And not only that, I know that the females were standing outside trying to look in because they're American, you know, they were there in a different country and they just wanted to see their mom be buried. And a stranger walked by them and said, you shouldn't be doing that. That's disrespectful because you're females and you're not allowed to see that. Mm-hmm. So somebody from America who, the children of the couple, I think are of either varying religions or no religion. That was an interesting kind of next kind of secondary trauma to the loss of their mom already. Because what do you do when the religion is this and this is the practice and then you are not of that religion or that country? But then, you know, so that was something I never had thought of. And
that goes to back to the very first thing that we kind of talked about, where we look at the other people and say, oh, why would you do it that way? And they look at us and go, why would you do it that way? That's so disrespectful. And you're like, no, you're the disrespectful one. So,
because this is a part one and a part two episode, we're going to wrap this one up with the option that currently I would like to do. And that is dun dun dun, aquamation. Anita, yeah, take it away.
So, well, now you're going to ask me and now I'm going to be like, actually, I don't know what they do. But somehow they put you in water chemicals and turn you into not a body anymore. Like dissolve you? What is it, Mel? Now that I think about it, I don't actually know what they do.
One moment, please.
Okay, good.
How does Aquaman 2 end? Okay. Aquamation. Aquamation uses a combination of alkalinity, gentle water flow, and temperature to speed up the process of decay. So it works in the same way as a natural decay does.
Oh, okay.
But it accelerates the process. I think.
What do you end up with, though?
I think it's similar to cremation, but it's finer.
Oh, okay. Because apparently in aquamation, and I'm not 100% sure on this, but I think that you are fertilizer after aquamation. Like all of your nutrients have not been removed, if I understand correctly. And it's supposed to be less expensive and maybe better for the environment. But I'm not 100% sure. And I think it's not 100% legal in the US. It is legal in Utah with a lot of different caveats. I think it's like 33 states that it's legal in as of now. There's also the option, Mel, which I think is cool, is they freeze dry your body and then they explode you.
Wait, now I want that.
Yeah. So you are like a powder and you are able to fertilize something.
Wow.
All of your nutrients are still there. So that's kind of like.
That's awesome.
Interesting and also bizarre and wow. People are like sending their loved ones to space somehow. Like, I know that's an interesting whole thing.
Donating body to science. That's free.
Yes. What about the body farm, Mel?
What's the body?
What that is?
I forgot.
You know.
TBD, because part two is going to be exciting. So, Anita, what can everybody be excited for on part two?
So we're going to talk about some of the varying traditions around the world, the disposition of their mortal remains, how we deal with those. So we're going to talk about some really interesting ones from around the world. So hopefully you found this interesting and not just hard to listen to and traumatic and you feel like you did everything wrong, because we all did the best we could and the funeral industry is stupid. So
yeah,
that's okay. All I have to say about that.
Well, thanks, Anita. So. Stay tuned for part two, everybody. Because yeah, there's a lot more interesting things to come to light.
If you want
to
keep the podcast going, what should they do, Mel?
Well, you could just Venmo us $1 million.
Direct Mine's payment.
At Mel Shore with the blue hair. You can find it. Please consider joining our Patreon. That's the way that we keep the podcast going.
You can do like a one-time donation at buymeacoffee.com/widowwedonow. And we use that for tacos.
Mm-hmm.
And if neither of those things are available to you, then just give us a nice rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps in the algorithm and in people finding us. So,
same. Yeah, it does. All right. Well, thanks, Anita. Good research. I'm excited for next time.
So interesting. All right. I'm Anita.
I'm Mel.
We're two young widows learning about the funeral industry and about what to do with our bodies. We're just figuring out, widow.
We
do
now. This is my favorite thing to discuss with you.
Tell me, what is it?
One of my favorite things. I do enjoy tacos and cheese and dogs. This is about how you cannot pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars for a phone plan, especially when you're a widow, your person is dead, you might have kids, you might need another option, and you just want your phone to work, you want unlimited texting and service, and you want it to be like $25 a month.
It blows my mind that they have plans that start at $15 a month. That is so cheap. And the cool thing is it uses other 5G networks. And so you don't have to pay extra for that. And you still get great service.
Yep. Anita and I have traveled all over, and I have used my phone. So I highly recommend it. And my mom's even on it. When my dad died, we put his phone down to the cheapest plan, which is $15 a month. And I think my mom's on the $20 a month plan, and it's so worth it. It's so much cheaper than what we were all paying before. So I highly recommend it if you're on a budget or not. Who cares? Ryan Reynolds is in charge of the company, and they send you free stickers with Ryan Reynolds temporary tattoos. It's kind of the best. So if somebody wants to sign up, what can they do, Anita?
Go to trymintmobile.com/WWDN. Seriously, you guys, such a great idea. Save yourself some money.
And if you're worried about losing data or having any changes with your phone, not going to happen. They walk you through it. Everything's fine. It's the easiest process of all time. Again, that's
trymintmobile.com/WWDN.